Welcome back to the Language Behavior Podcast. I'm here with Charlie Peck, fortunate to be with her today. Charlie, I want to know, last week, how was your holiday weekend?
Oh my gosh, it's been a crazy busy week, but it's been great. It's one of those weeks where it's just like so full of things and so much where it feels like it's been a month, but it's only been a week, but in a very good way. So yeah, how about you? It's great to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you. I had my oldest come back from college, so we got to spend the weekend with her and do a lot of fun things outdoors as it was absolutely gorgeous outside. So got to get out and enjoy that Colorado mountain range and go hiking and bike riding and all that kind of stuff. So it was great.
Very cool. Yeah, moved my son down from Canada. So yeah, big move too. So I get it.
Doing a lot with the family. So looking forward to getting back in the swing of things, but let's dive into the question if you're good with that.
Let's do it.
All right. I think this one's really universal. So this question is, why does sending a dysregulated student into the hallway usually make the behavior worse? So I don't know about you, but as a teacher, this was something that I did. I wouldn't say frequently, but it was a tool in my toolbox that I did try every once in a while. And I would agree that most times it didn't help the situation.
Well, that's the thing. I always look at the patterns of behavior. So if we're sending kids out, we're just constantly isolating them. We're telling them that you're not good enough to be here in this group. And so I know there are times where you just need to remove the behavior. And so the rest of the students aren't engaging, or if it gets aggressive or feel threatened, like, those are unique situations. But typically when we send kids out in the hallway, they feel othered. You know, they feel like, well, it's us against you. And that just that they just want to retaliate against that. Everything in our body wants connection. Everything in us as human beings needs to feel like we belong. And especially when we're working with kids, especially in adolescence, that is just such an important piece of their identity and their growth. So when we're sending them out, we're sending the message that you don't belong here. And even if we're just trying to do that to get stability of the classroom, which I get, again, we've been there before, it still sends the wrong message to the kid. It doesn't solve the problem. So now what about you? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, this came up actually a long time ago with when we did the foster care training, my wife and I. They talked about like time in versus time out. And they gave a very practical example of, you know, with a child, instead of sending him to the room, putting him in time out where they're isolated and by themselves, doing a time in where you're still taking away the opportunity for them to participate in whatever activity they want to, but they are with you. And like that dynamic shift of being belonged versus, like you said, not feeling wanted and isolated somewhere else. And so for a child that, you know, is feeling loved and has that beautiful relationship versus one that maybe has, you know, some other things going on in their life with trauma or chronic stress, like there is going to be obviously a huge disconnect when you are sending a student away and are possessing those things in their brain. And so for me, I always thought about it, oh, like as a teacher, I can think of plenty of times that I put a kid out in the hall and then, you know, I'm starting to create a fracture within that relationship, similar to the example of a parent and a child. The other thing too, I would say is, and teachers that are listening probably have seen this also, is that you're also introducing them to other things that they can get into, right? Like they just disappear and go to the bathroom or go to another class or become a disruption in the hallway for other students or for other classrooms. And I think too, that in that dynamic, you don't really have an opportunity to be in both spaces. And so now you're taking away the adult supervision and now putting more ownership on the child to regulate themselves and have good behavior in a space that they have free rein in. So I think you also are presenting other opportunities for the child. And unfortunately, kids take advantage of that. And then you've now compounded the problem because it's not the original infraction, but it might be some behaviors also in the hallway.
Yeah, that's right. So that causes more disruption, or they'll leave. They're not supervised. They're in an emotional hijack at that point. Yeah. That amygdala hijack is occurring. And that's why like sending them out doesn't help anybody. It helps the teacher because it feels like it gives us a little respite, but it doesn't actually solve the problem. And so that's what we're just trying. That's like constantly what we're trying to do here, Josh, is how do we solve the underlying problem? What's that language of behavior they're sending us so that we can get to the root cause? So yeah.
For sure.
It also, like for me, it always also goes back to, if it's brain-based, it's always brain-based for me here, brain and body connection. Mm-hmm. It sends that message and reinforces that you're not even safe here. I can't keep you safe. When I say that to some teachers, they like want to roll their eyes. I get it. But if we're talking to the brain, it's all about survival. It's all about security. So how can we do that in the space? And I always say it goes way back before the behavior even started. Like if there's something else going on that provoked the kid. I'm not saying it's the teacher. I'm not saying it's anything to blame anybody on, but let's go back to that root cause.
So what about the solution? What are some alternatives, Charlie? So like, I can only imagine folks are like, okay, well, I do this practice. I'm frustrated by it. What else can I do to make the situation better?
Yeah. So self-regulating is huge when we model that for the kids, but also co-regulating with the kid. And when we have a good relationship with them, this is much easier, especially if we've practiced. So when we start off a classroom, we can put in those rapid resets. Those are the, like the finger thumb switch, the breathing, the resistance, like pushing your hands together and release, the tense and release. Like when we do that as a part of daily practice, we are modeling and we are reinforcing that as a strategy for when we start to notice that we're dysregulated or we're noticing kids dysregulating. So it's always proactive. It's always about that. But when we co-regulate with them, we can say, okay, we're going to breathe in through our nose 4 seconds and then take a deep breath and then slowly breathe out. Like you can do this with them to co-regulate. Sometimes just sitting down with them, certainly not hovering, that just makes it feel way more like unsafe and threatening. But noticing our space with them, sitting down with them. I know we can't always do that because we're in a room with 30 kids. I get it. But sometimes just like distracting that amygdala, noticing that's an emotional dysregulation, that's a nervous system problem. So if we notice it's happening, then we want to distract the amygdala. You might even say to even a younger kid or even an older kid, like, can you help pass these papers out when you notice something's going on? So knowing them is huge, but also knowing the shift is important. That's just a part of it. What do you think?
Well, we've definitely talked about the push-in model. And if you don't have that implemented, the other way that you could do it is also have, you know, a team teacher or a teacher within your hallway to be able to either cover the classroom so you can have that one-on-one conversation. Or, I mean, obviously, you know your students, you know your class. If you do need to kind of put one leg in, one leg out of the hallway to have that one-on-one conversation, you might be able to have that depending on the severity of the behavior. But also, like, I had setups where the student did need a change of environment just for a short period of time. So maybe it was 10 minutes that they were with a team teacher to work and, you know, to calm themselves or maybe get away from a group of students that was aggravating them or creating that dysregulation. So I think there's other ways that you can, you know, use a team approach to maybe get a one-on-one conversation. Like you said, you may not always have the opportunity where you have, you know, 30 other students that have their ears and eyes on the situation. So either having that push-in model, having that team help, or even just another teacher that might be able to, you know, have that student for just a little bit. And maybe that's part of the regulation piece of, like, sometimes we need a break as the adults. I can't have this conversation right now. I'm in a heightened state. I can reflect on that. I know that's happening. So let's just get a little bit of time for both of us, a little bit separate, and then come back to have that really crucial conversation.
Yeah. And that's why I always like saying, like, how do they regulate in the space? There are so many easy ways to do that. Number one, some teachers already have like a calming corner and that is normalized in their classroom. Great. Use that if it's working, if you even have space for it. You can also self-regulate at your desk. So you can encourage kids to have a little box, or I always had baskets. I had tables often, and on the table, I would always have things in there, like little rocks that they're smooth and they can kind of rub those. I always had pipe cleaners and they can just kind of play with those. Anything to keep them in your space. Give them space, though, to either get a little movement, depending on what they need, or something that they can learn to regulate themselves. Sometimes you cue them, like, do you need something in the basket? Or you can point. Or if there's a kid who needs this repeatedly, you could have some kind of, like, thumbs up or whatever. Or sometimes just the way you look at them, they'll know that, oh, I need to do something here. But also, I like the option of letting kids put their head down. And a lot of teachers don't like that, but that does so much for some kids. It gives them sometimes darkness when the light is overwhelming their senses, like sensory system. Sometimes the noise, it helps them block out noise and it gives them a reset. You could say, okay, take 2 minutes, put your head down and come on back when you're ready. Imagine like how empowering that is for the kid to have a little escape plan while they're still in the space with you. And sometimes they're still listening to you do the instruction if you are during that time. You don't even have to say it out loud. You can just allow them just the space and time to do that if they need it by having a conversation about it beforehand. Some of it is just shifting the way that we're teaching and facilitating a classroom.
Yeah, I think that goes back to the finding the root of the cause. And, you know, if it's something that you have control over, of course, reflecting and making those shifts and changes as a teacher to make sure that doesn't happen again. However, I do love the fact that you were talking about just that teach piece, because we can't assume that, you know, our students know how to regulate themselves or how to find the underlying reason that they're feeling the way that they are. So I love that teach piece that's a part of that in addition to modeling the regulation. So Charlie, I'm looking at the time. Are you good to go through our next bit, which is good. Behind the banter?
You got it.
All right. So this is behind the banter. This is just getting to know us a little bit better. And also sometimes I like to, you know, connect it to the topic at hand. So, all right, Charlie, if you were to eliminate one school policy forever, what would it be?
Hoods. I think kids should be able to put their hoods up.
Dude, I think you stole mine.
I stole yours? Did I really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that was the first thing that came to my mind. Yeah. Go ahead though, Charlie.
Well, it's true because, you know, it gives them an escape. It, mm-hmm. If they're feeling like a little insecure about their looks that day, I mean, it just helps them mask that a little bit. It does so much. Yeah. And it's just a hood. I get it. You go ahead. I want to hear your part.
I kind of push back quite a bit. Thankfully, our district changed the policy to allow hoods, but I push back a lot because of the thing of like, oh, it's a safety issue. And I remember plenty of times that we had cameras in hallways and were able to catch the students that did stuff if we needed to, even if they wore a hood. But, and what was also interesting, Charlie, I would say, is policing that every single day was such a beatdown as an administrator. And as soon as it turned into a policy that hoodies were allowed, guess what went away? 90% of the kids that wore them prior to stopped doing it. It was just the kids that needed it. So it was more of a authority, like for the middle school students, it was like, you can't tell me what to do. This is dumb. I'm going to do it anyways. And then it became a power struggle over something. And then once it was removed, it was amazing to see that not only did I not have to police it, but just the fact that kids just didn't do it anymore.
That's right. It was a battle. That was with hats too. We got rid of our hat, the policy on hats, and kids could wear hats. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, great. We just didn't have to have that authority piece every single day. And you're right. The thing is with the hoods, there's just so much beyond what it does emotionally and socially for some kids. Mm-hmm. Like having them have the ability, just have an out when they had to show up to school and they didn't want to be there. It's like a safety net for them. Like there's just so much more to it. And it's so minor.
For sure.
I don't know. I'm glad we are in sync with that.
We had the same experiences. So, well, I think that's why we wrote a book together, Charlie. We're simpatico. So, all right, let's talk about something that's super exciting that's coming up right around the corner, which is, I just can't believe that we're already in September, but here we've got the School Behavior Solutions Summit coming up September 16th and 17th. And we've got two different time spots. So the first day, it will be from 5 to 9 p.m. Eastern time. The second day, just a slightly earlier, it's 4:30 to 9 p.m. It's a free event. Charlie, we've been talking about it here for a couple episodes, but for, you know, maybe some that missed the other episodes, can you just share out, you know, what they'll be experiencing if they sign up for School Behavior Solutions Summit?
Yeah, first of all, you can show up live 2 days with our speakers. These are elite industry speakers, you all. They have great solutions for you and you can ask them questions directly. So some people are like, oh, I can't be there both days, or I can't be there for all of it or any of it. Sign up still. It's all free and you will get all the replays. We'll email them to you right after the summit ends. And then like our team will kind of fix them up and make them look good so they can send them out to you. But after that, we have bonus speakers too, and they're going to give either information, resources, or video for you. So it is so worth it. And also, if you go to thrivingeducator.org/speakers, you'll see everyone who's going to be there, and they have resources there for you now as well. You can sign up right there as well. So sign up. You're definitely going to not want to miss out on this.
Yeah, for sure. I love the additional content that folks get because, it just trickles out afterwards. So it's great, the information and this brilliant speakers, but you know, it's that bonus that they are offered for free. You know, everyone that's speaking is just providing free resources, not only with their time and what they're talking about, but also some things that you can download. And I'm so excited to see all of the wonderful people that are participating. If this is of interest for yourself, for your staff, for those who you may know, please make sure that you're sharing it out, because we would love to get as many folks as possible there for the two-day event. And then definitely go over to thrivingeducator.org. You're going to be able to see all of the different speakers, and honestly, I've lost track of the number. I feel like it's at least 18 on that day, but I could be wrong.
I think it's 21 or 22.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
I knew it was a big number. So lots of folks there. And we're going to have more of an interview style. So it's going to be pretty low key. It's not going to be your typical conference setting for the summer. And so can't wait for those conversations. Charlie, as far as the topic at hand with, you know, regulating students in the hallway, you know, what are some closing thoughts for you?
Yeah, I want you to think that 2 minutes of empathetic listening activates the oxytocin, which counteracts the cortisol that's causing stress and overwhelm. So kind of reopens those neural pathways to the prefrontal cortex so we can get kids back online to start thinking and problem solving the way we want to. We can lead that through empathetic listening.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank everyone for tuning in once again this week. We are seeing growth with this podcast, not only with the numbers and listenership, but also expanding across the world. We're beyond the United States, and seeing our numbers increase in Canada and France and other countries is pretty remarkable. So keep up the good work as far as the work that you're doing in your classroom and your schools and your districts. But also, we love the fact that you're sharing this podcast out to other folks that may feel like this resource is valuable, because obviously student behavior is it's a big deal. It really does shift the way that we see everything. And so if we can be of assistance, I've already put Charlie's website, but I'm going to throw it up on the screen. Once again, for those who are watching on YouTube, thrivingeducator.org, make sure you're tapping into her and her resources if you have anything going on in your world. Otherwise, you can head over to joshdamper.com for the same. And on our websites, we've got a lot of different things as far as blogs, free downloadables, newsletters, the whole gamut. So make sure you check that out. And of course, we'd love for you to pick up a copy of The Language of Behavior. And a lot of folks are using the free book study kit too, Charlie. Yes. Can you shout that out as far as what they'll get when they download that for free?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So you get a guide, a total guide, a facilitator guide. We got it all there for you. We've got even email templates that you can send out to remind people or invite people to the book study. We have reproducibles. We have reflection questions. We have worksheets. It's all there. It's just, and it's totally free. We want you to be able to easily do this and have this conversation. Yeah. And by the way, we're giving out books, free books as giveaways at the summit too. And all of our speakers have something for you too. So make sure you show up there. Just go to thrivingeducator.org at the top. You can sign up for free.
Very cool. All right, y'all. Well, we hope you have a wonderful week, and it's great to see that the weather's changing, fall is upon us. And if you need any support, we're here for you. And we look forward to seeing you once again for episode 41.
Awesome. See you guys.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you on the next episode.